Today, Mike Haynes and I take our best shot at wrapping up the NHL trade deadline, everything that happened and has gone on. One thing I will say happened after our taping, the Evgeny Dodonov trade has been invalidated by the NHL. A lot of finger pointing, a lot of blame. But at the end of the day, Dodonov and his $5 million cap hit stay in Vegas. Oh boy, what a situation. We'll talk about that a little bit later, but for now, on with the show. Hello again, everyone. Welcome into the Talking Puck Podcast. Indeed, we are just past the NHL trade deadline, and Tom Callahan, Mike Haynes here for you to... This is a mini breakdown. We did the full-on breakdown on Monday, and we did turn that into a podcast show as well. But Mike, I think coming out of the deadline for us here, it's easy to pinpoint, I think, some of our winners and losers. And I just want to do that here by way of a wrap-up show. So, you know, I don't know if you want to start in the West or the East. I think we agree the more fascinating is the East, but in the West, I think some horses did separate themselves from the pack as well. So whichever side you'd like to start on.
Yeah, you know, we did the live broadcast on Monday, and it was right after trade deadline had ended, even though trades continued to trickle in as we went on the air. But, you know, now we've had a full day of just sort of allowing it to sift and to really take a closer look at who did well, who didn't. And it's easy for us to sit here now. We don't know the real answer until the playoffs happen. And these trades, most of them are for the teams that are in the playoffs. The trades that are made are generally to try to help their Stanley Cup wishes come true.
Right.
While the teams that are out, they are trying to unload, trying to build for the future. So you have to also look at teams like a Montreal in Anaheim. They're not going to be in the playoffs, but maybe they are still winners in terms of what they did. So we can analyze that, not just the players that got moved to teams that are vying for the Stanley Cup. But if I was to start, I would say, who was the winner? I would say Eastern Conference playoff team fans are the winners, because the top eight all did something, except for Washington. But the other seven teams really improved themselves. What do you think?
You know what, Mike? I think that is actually a tremendous way to look at it. I didn't even think of it in terms of, I'm, you know how I am. I'm always so busy thinking about teams and what this means for so-and-so and such. Man, the fans really did win. Mm-hmm. I mean,
they really did.
It's going to be a lot of fun if you're a fan of a couple teams in the West, as you mentioned, but really the East. If mm-hmm. you're just a fan of hockey, let's say you're a fan of one of the teams out of the race, but you enjoy watching the playoffs. I remember when I was a kid that this is probably, well, I can't even remember what age of a kid it was, but I feel like there was a certain period for me. Maybe it was late 80s, maybe it was early 90s, but the league was wide open. Mm-hmm. Wide open. Anything could happen. Playoffs were always magical because going in, it felt like you could have upsets, you could have teams that would have a chance to beat all these other teams, and it was that period when the Oilers weren't winning cups, like starting, I guess, in, what, 88, where the Canadiens won their one cup of the decade. And so from there until maybe, I would say probably when the Devils really locked the game down in the mid-90s. Mm-hmm. But in there, I felt like it was really kind of a magical period where a lot of teams were good and a lot of teams could beat other teams, and everybody seemed to have at least one big-time star player who showed up in the playoffs. That is the feel of the East for me this year, because as much as we talk about Florida, Carolina, Tampa being the number one teams, Pittsburgh still has Crosby and Malkin. You know, Toronto has Austin Matthews. Boston still has, you know, Marchand and just Washington's got Ovi. You look at these teams, everybody's got a star on it. Everybody has a player who's capable of taking over, dominating a series, helping his team win a series. This year for the Rangers, it's Chris Kreider. You know, it's fun. It's fun because I look at that and there's no way I can say beyond a shadow of a doubt that you couldn't have an upset in the East, because I think Boston has shown the ability to pick up and win. Now they're older. Washington, same thing. They're aging, but they can still beat these other teams, and they do. I'll look at the scores, and I, you know, the Capitals will beat the Panthers or something, and it's I feel like in my mind it should be Carolina, Florida, Tampa as the real three team race. But when I think about it, if one of those superstars has a big series, and then all the trades that happen to fortify all of these teams, I don't know. It's really interesting. And again, Raquel going to Pittsburgh, let's start there. He's a guy who used to be a 30-goal scorer. The Ducks have fallen on tough times. So did Raquel. Didn't want an extension. They trade him to Pittsburgh. He's a guy that I think could make a big, dynamic scoring type of impact with that team. And are the Penguins going to vault here in the next couple of weeks to the top of this conversation? Who knows? Maybe.
It certainly is possible. They didn't do anything to change their goaltending situation. And if they can stay healthy, you know what, they'll contend. I still think, on paper, if healthy, Florida, Tampa Bay, Carolina are the three best teams. And I don't know in the first round if those guys are going to get knocked out. Now, again, everything depends on where they finish and who they're going to have to play in that first round. So I'm just, if we get a, is it more than likely, where could we see Florida and Tampa Bay play each other? Can they play each other in the division, or do they have to wait till the conference finals to face off against each other? Because to me, that's the most interesting playoff series I could watch this coming spring. That to me is the best possible matchup of a playoff series. So is those two teams.
As I'm looking right now at so the top three in the Atlantic is Florida, Tampa, Toronto. Mm-hmm. And then this is as of our taping here. Then Boston, Washington are the wild card teams. So I think, barring, and I know we have a lot of hockey to go, but let's just say Florida manages to stay in front of Tampa, so they finish 1-2. You're looking at the Atlantic Division final. So Tampa, right. Florida gets whatever wild card team. At this point, they would get Washington. And then Tampa would play maybe a Toronto, but, you know, we'll see. But I think, Mike, it's pretty likely that that's your Atlantic Division final, and then we could have Carolina-Pittsburgh, Carolina Rangers, and there's some heat between those teams. I've been watching the Hurricanes a bit more lately, and their games against the division rivals are testy, and it's fun hockey to watch. I love it, because every play, you know, we're getting to that point, every play matters. Everybody's angry about something, and that's where we're at in the Metro right now, and it's actually kind of fun. I haven't watched the Metro much this year, but suddenly I find myself really drawn to it.
So more than likely, we're going to see in the second round, Florida against Tampa, and then Carolina's going to face whoever they get. Saying that those three teams get through the first round. So we're then probably going to get either Florida or Tampa against Carolina for the conference finals. How good will that be?
Oh, my.
But here's the thing. When you break it down, Tampa, they made a great trade. They got a 23-year-old stud in Hagel that's going to add some. You just think, can this team, what do they need, this team? They're two-time defending Stanley Cup champs. Well, you know, you bring in a little blood from a young kid who's hungry, who can skate, who can score. You had to get rid of some players at the end of the season through expansion draft and through having to unload some salary. This puts them back close to where they were. I just don't know if they've got too many miles on them, just going through two Stanley Cup runs. Florida, on the other hand, doesn't have any miles on them.
Right.
This is a hungry team that can score. And what do? They went out and got the best forward available in Claude Giroux, who is hungry. Now, he's not 23. He's older, but he still can play. He's hungry to win. And here's the interesting thing, and you can make this argument of Florida doesn't have players on their team that have won before. where Tampa does.
And yeah.
I just wonder if it comes down to game seven, if can the talent of Florida win that series, or is Tampa Bay just knowing how to win? Because how many game sevens have they pulled out? Vasilevsky's perfect in game sevens.
Yeah.
And they just squeeze by and get to that conference final. So, but back to the trade deadline part. I like the fact that these teams, seven out of the eight teams in the playoffs, went out and did something. Even Carolina got Max Domi.
Right.
And so it shows me how competitive that Eastern Conference is and how much those seven teams believe that they can come out of that conference and go to the Stanley Cup. I thought the fans are going to love it. I thought those seven teams improved themselves. The East did much more to get better than the Western Conference did. Now, if we switch over to the West, I'll let you start with what you think teams did. Well, you know what? Let's finish up with losers over in the East. I apologize. Let's do losers over there.
Sure. Sure.
I don't get what the Islanders did there. The only explanation I can think of is they felt that this was just an exception season, that they got off to a bad start because they were on the road so early with that new arena. They just couldn't quite get their footing. They never caught it, and they just went, you know what? We are a really good team. This was just a bad season. We're coming back with virtually everybody. In fact, we're giving extensions right now. They're not trading people. They're giving extensions to people right now. And so that I didn't understand. To me, that was the biggest mystery. And then Washington not really doing anything to try to stay up with the other seven teams in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think I look at the Islanders. They were a little bit of a question mark for me. I'm surprised Columbus wasn't more active. But the two teams that I think acquired players that were trying, but I don't know that these are put them over the hump guys, Toronto and Boston. I like Mark Giordano, but he's 38 years old. He is not the guy who's going to suddenly lead Toronto to the promised land, I don't think. Now, of course, there's talk, oh, well, he's going to be our shutdown guy, and but a 38-year-old playing heavy minutes in the playoffs for a Toronto team, I don't know if that's got the makings of a run. And Hampus Lindholm, I like the player, but I don't know if his style of, I'll call it defense, is what the Bruins need in the playoffs. So I didn't like those either. But you're right, the Islanders a bit of a head-scratcher there, and I thought Columbus might have done a little bit more. To me, just to kind of put a bow on it, for me the two biggest acquisitions were Giroux and Hagel, and I think that Florida and Tampa did the best. Like you said, Carolina got Max Domi, but, man, I'm looking at Florida and Tampa going, these two teams, they know who the enemy is. It's just across the state, and that's where the bar is for both of these clubs, and they are ready to go after it. I can't wait to see, and I really hope it does turn out that they do face each other, because...
Do you think there are hockey fans in Canada, their heads are spinning, thinking the two best teams in the NHL probably are in Florida? I don't know. That just makes me laugh.
I'm sure it's killing some of them.
But I mean, going, really? Hey, this is our game. This is our game. Down in Florida, they don't even have ice down there, other than what you put in your drink.
That's right.
The two best teams. I don't know. It just makes me
laugh.
That's
the old joke. The only ice is the stuff you find in your drink. But, you know, right. I mean, man, I think it's fantastic. And good for Florida. Because they are finally starting to get people to take notice of that franchise, like they haven't since their cup run in 96. So good for Florida. That's good to see.
Time for a quick break, then back with more of the Talking Puck podcast in just a moment. You know, here at Talking Puck, we generate a lot of media on different platforms. Open Media's 4K download suite makes my life a lot easier, and it can help you too. Whether you need to download audio clips, convert streams to audio, which we do a lot of here, creating slideshows, or even need help with your social media accounts like Instagram and TikTok, there's something for everyone, from casual user to pro. Use our special link, bit.ly/4kpuck. That's bit.ly/4kpuck to receive a special discount of 25% off your purchase. That's bit.ly/4kpuck. Talking Puck is now on Signal to Noise Radio every Monday night at 7 p.m. Eastern. Signal to Noise is one of the fastest growing internet radio stations, and now they have merch. Help spread the word about Signal to Noise Radio with t-shirts, stickers, keychains, and more. Shipping is direct and free. $25 gets you a t-shirt, while keychains and swag packs start at just $7. Order today at stnradio.com/merch. And thanks for your support. Now, back to the show.
Well, if we go over to the West, there was not as much excitement in terms of teams doing big things other than on trade deadline day. The biggest trade made was by Minnesota. And I will go back to it again. The fact that Marc-Andre Fleury really had a lot of say in where he wanted to go, and he thought Minnesota. And if you really start to look at it, and tell me if I'm wrong here, is Bill Guerin was with Pittsburgh for quite a while.
They won a cup together, yes.
I wonder if there's some – Bill Guerin is one of the most likable people you ever meet in hockey. Everybody who meets Bill Guerin loves him.
Yes.
And I wonder if that relationship had anything to do with Fleury saying, this guy's smart. I want to play for a team that this guy is guiding. I'm going there. I look at they can score. They're young. This was a team at the beginning of the season, Tom. They came out of the gate flying. They were getting really good goaltending. They were scoring. Now, they were winning a lot of games in overtime and shootouts, but they were winning. And then when the goaltending kind of went down a little bit, the team started to sag. So maybe all they needed was a Marc-Andre Fleury coming in there and they can get back. And I loved what you analyzed on Monday, the fact that with what's coming with their salary cap situation because of dumping those salaries of those two players, Parisi and Suter.
Yeah.
It almost is. We got to do something this year.
Right. Right. And I look at – so here's the thing, Mike. And as we do look at what's going on with these teams, again, we can only give you the stats of our taping today here, which is March 22nd. But Minnesota is back in second behind Colorado. They have – 78 points. Now, the Avalanche are way out in front, 95 points. Okay, we see how this is going. But 78 and 78 now for Nashville again. And then you have St. Louis with 77. So St. Louis is going to kind of be nip-tuck. But right now, St. Louis is the first wild card. And then you've got the Vegas, Dallas, Winnipeg, Vancouver logjam. And Vegas is still 1 point in front of Dallas for that last wild card. Mm-hmm. So discounting the Pacific for a minute, I look at... The bar in the Central is clearly Colorado and how they're playing this year. And Colorado still doesn't have a proven goaltender. Colorado seems to have everything else in place. They have a tremendous goal differential. They're very good at home, but they're great on the road as well. Minnesota's a really good home team, actually better, and I was surprised by that. But as I mentioned when we were talking the other day, Minnesota's fourth in total offense in the NHL this year, which came as a surprise to me. But I think if you're Fleury... And you look at it, and I watched the Minnesota Wild broadcast against Vegas, and sure enough, even though Fleury was in uniform, didn't play, they interviewed him. And he came on, they asked him specifically, why Minnesota, since you had the control over this? And he said, I really liked the way, and he didn't talk about the offense or the record or anything. He said, I liked the interaction of the guys in the room. He said, I liked the players here, the contingent of players in that room. And he said, since I've walked in the door, they've made me feel great. He's like, but he really talked about the chemistry of that Wild team. That's a Bill Guerin thing, right? That's a culture. So what Fleury is buying here, in his own words, is really the culture of the Minnesota Wild that he believes Guerin is putting in place, a big-time winning culture. Fleury didn't sound like a guy ready to retire. He sounded like a guy who was ready to try to do something with this Wild team for a year or two yet. So that's interesting and telling to me, Mike, but that he must have been sold on that by Guerin and the team. And, I don't know who talks to who and whether or not you could call it tampering or any of that. I'm not going to allege any of that stuff. But, you know, guys talk in the league. Mm-hmm. Guys talk. Right. They text. Buddies are on other teams now. It's not like it used to be where you don't talk to anybody. So Fleury must have felt not only incredibly comfortable with how they're winning, but how they're built and how what this team looks like. So you're right. For him to pick Minnesota says something about what the Wild are doing, because right. that's a huge move for them. And for
huge.
Him.
Oh, it is. It changes everything too. And I am a big believer, because I've seen it. I've seen it firsthand. When a winner comes into a locker room, they can have an impact. Somebody who knows how to win and what it takes. And Fleury does. Yeah. You can take his skill set. And I know I talked to a couple of goalies yesterday, and his style, sometimes you're like, what is he doing? It's not always the classic butterfly style. He plays it a little bit different. Sometimes he gets caught. Remember that that game against Montreal when he lost behind the net, lost the puck.
Yep.
In that series. But you get a guy who can come up with big time saves when you need it. At 37, you know, how hungry is he still? He must be. And he seems like it, at least. And he stayed relatively healthy this season for a team that wasn't very good, Chicago. So I'm excited to see what happens. If they finish second, if they get Nashville or St. Louis in the first round, and then that'll set up Colorado, and if they win, if Minnesota in that second round, which could be really interesting for sure, because remember, Fleury knocked them out last year for Vegas.
Yes. Wow, it was just last year he was playing for Vegas. It seems like he's been so many places since then. That's crazy.
That was the trade that excited me yesterday, for sure. Other than that, I thought the West was fairly humdrum. I'm not saying teams didn't do well or smart or pick up some pieces, but we didn't have that blockbuster.
The West was decided days ago. Yarncroak and Toffoli to Calgary happened days ago. You know, the Josh Manson trade for the Avs happened days ago.
Yeah.
You're right. The only thing that really of major importance, and it's a big one, was the Fleury trade at the deadline. So other than that, but I kind of like that. I kind of like that Calgary knows who they are and said, we're going to go out and get a couple pieces and we're going to plug them in and we're done. And, to a certain extent, Colorado did that too. They got, and really, they didn't add much. They just got, you know, Josh Manson, and they paid a good price for him. I like Helison as a player and a 23 second round pick, but if he's the guy that plugs into your defense and all of a sudden makes you that much harder to score against, that's you have the offense. Colorado has the guns. Now it's keeping the pucks out. So, you know, instead of getting a goaltender, maybe Colorado once again says, well, we don't need a goaltender. Look how good they made Philip Grubauer.
Well, but remember, the last two playoffs that they've been involved in, they had serious goaltender injuries. That probably cost them the last two years in a row. They had goaltender injuries. Remember, it was 2 years ago against Dallas that they were going with their third goalie in Game 7 against them.
I thought they were going to call your son to come in and address.
He was stretching and warming up,
catching a tennis ball off the wall in the back.
Right, just in case. But it was so. And then last year they had some injuries too. You know that hurt them. So, and I'm still waiting. Kemper is a goalie who every year gets hurt. I'm still waiting for that big injury to happen to him. So we'll see. But that's, you know, they're the standard. And, I read a lot in the Calgary papers and stories up there, and they feel like the moves they made, and of course they've got to say this, but I think there's some credence to it. Everybody, because I thought it was different in the East. You have three teams who are the top, but not so far away. But that's not the case in the West. I think everybody was going, okay, what do we got to do to match the number one team? And Calgary feels, if you read the stories, and again, you know, nobody's going to go on record and go, hey, I thought we really screwed up here. We're not even close. They're going to say the right things, but I think there's credence to it. They feel like the moves they made put them in a position where they can compete with the number one team, and I think Minnesota feels that way now, too, with Fleury. So suddenly what looked like an easy walk to the Stanley Cup final may not be that easy. With what Calgary and Minnesota did.
So let me ask you then, I think we agree, Calgary, Minnesota, and Colorado, those are your powerhouses at this mm-hmm. point, at least as far as, yep. And other teams can compete. But two teams I want to ask you about, L.A. Mm-hmm. and Edmonton. L.A. did really nothing, and Edmonton did a little bit of something with Derek Brassard and Brett Kulak. Kulak is probably the more important piece there. He gives them a little bit of defensive depth. But were those teams... were they right to do not a whole lot and not make a big splash? Prices were high this year. I mean, LA sitting second. They're behind Calgary. The gap is 8 points. Are they really 8 points away from Calgary in reality, good or bad?
No. No, they're not. And realism is that LA is not going to do anything this year. They're not ready yet. But I think there was some backlash that Rob Blake, their GM, did nothing. And I mean, you're in second place.
Yeah.
But they didn't do anything. And so I think, I don't know why they just stood still. Edmonton also, they helped themselves a little bit. They lost here in Denver last night in overtime. So I don't know whether they feel like, oh, we can compete with this team. I don't know. I don't know if they feel that way. They've been getting decent goaltending, but they've got a three-headed goaltender now going into the playoffs.
Right.
Which they got to figure that out. And the other team that's disappointing to me is St. Louis. Why did you not? You did nothing. Nothing. Dallas did nothing. Here are the teams, the three teams in the Central that did nothing. St. Louis, basically nothing. St. Louis, Nashville, and Dallas did nothing of significance. Why? Why?
Especially Dallas, I thought... I mean, unless you are just paralyzed by the fact that you're 1 point out of a wild card at this point, but if I'm Dallas, I'm probably going to retool that team. Because... they've been so wildly inconsistent, not just this season, Mike, but the last couple of seasons. I've looked at Dallas, and we talk about identity for teams from time to time, and can you tell me who Dallas is or what they are? I have no idea. I don't think Dallas knows what it is.
No, not anymore. For a while there, you had Ben, Sagan, those you had these young guns that, you know, maybe could get some offense going, but... I don't know. And again, I thought they were going to be either a buyer or a seller, and they were neither.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't. And the same St. Louis, too. You know, they've still got enough of a core left over from a Stanley Cup championship that you would think, let's add some stuff and maybe we can get another run in. And they did nothing, really. They added a tiny little piece here or there, but nothing of significance. It's sort of like, I don't know. Do you think teams just went... we've got no shot at coming out of this, out of the playoffs. Let's spin our offs. Let's retool. Let's not send off any high draft choices or prospects for what would be no chance to make it. Do you think GMs think that way in reality? And when they're there alone, do they think we don't have a shot? I'm not going to trade my future for a playoff run that's not going to happen this year.
Especially if you don't want to pay the price, I understand. Mm. If maybe you were in on some deals, but the prices were too high. I get that. Mm. But also, Mike, you know, one thing, I think in a way, modern media has almost made it a crime to like your team enough not to change it. We all feel like there's always this magical, you know, golden key at the deadline, this one player who will come in and, oh, you know, the clouds part, the sun shines, and rainbows
hello,
everywhere, and you want to go.
Right. Right. Hello, Butch Goring. Butch Goring ruined it for everybody.
Yeah, yeah, he really did. And everybody...
Everybody thinks they're going to get a Butch Goring and win four Stanley Cups.
Right.
That really is... I'm telling you, he is the market. I know Butch really well. I broadcast teams for him for years, and I just know that history, and I see that name come up almost every year. Yep. Still, that was 1980 that trade was made, and they still bring up the Butch. And he did make the. They did win 4 Stanley Cups. He was the big difference on that team, and everybody's looking at that. There's no other sport that does this on trade deadline like hockey does. Is there? There's nobody. Baseball does. Baseball, I mean, everybody makes trades at trade deadline, but nobody does it like hockey does.
Yeah.
No other sport does. It's crazy. It's insane. Really. It's fun for us to watch.
Sure, sure.
But,
yeah.
Wow. And I just think that just to finish up, I just wonder if teams looked and went, we Minnesota and Calgary – or the different. The other teams went, we've got no shot this year. There's no point in us not selling the future. We're not going to win this conference this year. I don't know.
Yeah, and there are probably some teams, like, again, Vegas, and we'll see what happens with Evgeny Dodonov, but trying to unload contracts, and maybe there just aren't – there are teams willing to take some, but they want other things in return to take your contract, and maybe those deals just couldn't be worked out. So there are a couple of teams that have that issue as well. But, you know, in a way – I'm disappointed Los Angeles didn't do anything in second, but maybe that's just Rob Blake saying, I like this team the way it's assembled. It's young. We've got some, and they do. They have some up-and-coming stars. They have a nice farm system, really good prospect base. So maybe he's just saying, you know what, we're ahead of schedule. That's great. We'll play it out, see what happens. Maybe that's exactly what that is. But as far as the this year and trying to win a cup this year, I think we have a clear separation of the teams that are 100% all in this year, and the other teams are like, well, we'll roll the dice. And you know what? The Kings and the Oilers ruin that for everybody, because you sneak in late. That Kings, speaking of the Kings, get in as the eighth seed and go on a run.
I know.
Things can happen.
Yeah, that's for sure. No, that's for sure. But I think there's some reality to it as well. And
yeah.
I think that, you know, not a lot of excitement in the West. I think Minnesota did the best with the big splash of improving themselves, you know, where I think Calgary did a nice job. And then you look at teams that are not in the playoffs. Anaheim unloaded some things, got a lot in return. Arizona did okay with getting some players back, or some draft choices and things back. But I thought Anaheim did really well for a team that earlier in the season you thought, well, maybe there's a little magic happening. Well, you know, reality set in there in Anaheim, but they did a nice job, I thought, Tom, of unloading players and getting a lot in return.
They did. They got a lot of capital back, both in draft picks and prospects. I thought Seattle did a really good job loading up for a team that doesn't have a big prospect base, and they need one. And also Montreal quietly did pretty well. The Shea Weber contract didn't go anywhere, but that might happen over the summer. You know, that's going to be interesting to me to see, as Montreal, because now they have to build it back up. But they're, you know, in free fall, basically, towards the bottom. It's going to be between them, Seattle, and Arizona for first overall pick, or at least the best odds. So, but those teams, you know, they did pretty well. And as you mentioned, Anaheim, I thought actually Pat Verbeek is stepping in, putting his stamp on the team. And this is what I like. I like a Bill Guerin or a Pat Verbeek who comes in, and there's no guesswork here. This is where we're going. I'm telling you where we're going. Get on board or get out. And so I think that's good for Anaheim, too. So they are sticking to their direction. They're going that way. Good for them.
Yep. I think of the general managers, the one that's going to face maybe the most heat because of what's happened might be up in Winnipeg, because that it just – all that planning, all that work, and it hasn't panned out. And so I just think there's going to be a lot of heat up, which is ironic, a lot of heat in Winnipeg.
There's never a lot of heat in Winnipeg. And now you're right, Mike, it's going to turn into, hey, remember we said give us 5 years? Can you give us another 5 years, please? We need another 5 years.
Yeah, it's not a patient fan group up there.
No, absolutely not. So we'll see. Ooh, there could be some off-season moves, but well, hey, you know what? That's another show for another day. All right, so to wrap things up then, Mike, here as we step out on this trade deadline edition of the podcast, give me your favorite overall trade, either conference. Just what do you think was the best move made?
Well, if you don't mind, I want to do two, and they kind of go together. The Claude Giroux and the Marc-Andre Fleury trades. And the reason is because both said they had full control over where they wanted to go. They got to really make that decision. Giroux especially, said to Philadelphia, this is your only option. And the reasons they gave for the trades, the teams that they went to, with Giroux really believing Florida, he said, they're just annoying to play against. And I just thought that was such a great quote.
Yeah.
And the fact that he obviously wants to win, and that he felt that that was the best team for him to go to. And for Marc-Andre Fleury, you look, there's a lot of teams that could have used a Marc-Andre Fleury, so he had an opportunity to decide, and he goes with Minnesota. And just the fact that those guys looked, and they're much smarter and they know the game much better and obviously much closer to it than I am, but for them to look and go, I think Florida's going to win, I think Minnesota can win. And that always is intriguing to me when the guys on the inside who probably understand it better than anybody else decide that that's the team that I want to play for.
All right, well, I was going to talk about the Giroux trade, but since you talked about the Giroux trade, I'm going to go with one other one, and I think it is the Hagel deal for Tampa Bay. And here's why. Because Tampa Bay added a couple of draft picks. They gave up two first-rounders, so that's not small, but it's 23 and 24 when Tampa figures those are still late-round, first-round picks. Hagel is a young player. He's a stud. He is a guy with more upside, and they are bringing him in with his hands and his talent to a Tampa Bay team that has the ability to make players better. Mm-hmm. And just now finding a fit for him might take a little bit, but they get him with enough time. We got, 6 weeks to the end of the season. I think that the Hagel trade for Tampa Bay, you want to talk about, and we do talk about how Tampa, they played a lot of hockey. Are they going to get tired? Sometimes you get that young guy in the lineup. You know, he's not a veteran guy who's won, but they don't need that. They are the team of the veteran guys who have won. What they're bringing in is an injection of youthful energy. And from that standpoint, I think that that is exactly what the doctor ordered for the Tampa Bay Lightning. When it gets a little long in the tooth, when you're in the middle of that conference final series, you're going to look down the bench, and here's this kid absolutely vibrating with energy just to be there. You can feed off of that, you know? And the war-torn veterans, so to speak, are the guys who may be like, this is a long series. I'm starting to feel it a little bit. And you're going to have this water bug kid going around. I think that that is a great move for Tampa Bay. So I like that. And if he can find a home on a line and be productive, man, that's going to be really over the top for them. And it's a nice piece for them to add. Big cost, but also has some future to it. It's not just a this year and done move. So that is the other part I like about it, is it has some legs to it.
Yep. And the shame is, we've got the potential of having the best playoff series take place in the second round there in Florida.
Yeah. Yeah, you're going to have those years. But I'll tell you what, no matter who the Stanley Cup is, generally they're pretty good. I know we have a couple of clunkers here and there, but, Mike, we really have the potential to have a really, really good Stanley Cup final this year with multiple entrants from either side.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Oh, no, the trade deadline, I think, has widened the amount of teams that have a possible run at the Stanley Cup. And that's what makes the trade deadline day so fun. If you're a fan of your team and your team made some moves, it's just like the start of the season at training camp. You're going, maybe this is our year. Maybe, maybe things are going to happen. And that trade deadline day gives fans that new hope. You know what? Now we can make a run for it. So it just reinvigorates hockey fans, and that's what makes the day so exciting.
Absolutely. All right. Well, with that, we'll wrap it up here on the trade deadline winners, losers, and kind of a look back for Mike and I. We appreciate you being here for the podcast. Please like, follow, and subscribe anywhere you get your podcasts. And, of course, Talking Puck TV is live Sunday nights at 9 p.m. on Twitch, YouTube, and even Twitter as well, and Facebook Live. The other thing, too, we are now on stnradio.com Monday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern as well. If you miss the Sunday show, you can always catch it on Monday. All right, so for Mike, I'm Tom. We will talk to you next time. Thanks for joining us, everybody.